Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun. And we're holding at the top of the daf. We had a machlokas yesterday about whether we should learn out the din of the going back for chometz and for basar kodesh that you have in your rishus for purposes of sreifa or for purposes of biur from your home. It was a machlokas whether we should look at a kibetz or whether we should look at a kezayis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And the way that we understood it that was most effective was it was a question of whether we look at the Isser that was Goreim, ultimately the fact that it would need to be burned, in which case the Isser of Achila, of course, is the Isser of a Kezayit, or whether we should look at the Dinim that affect things outside of the Halakas of Achila, because after all, what we're talking about over here is the Biur, and to base it on the Achila, it makes more sense to base it on what the Torah considers to be a choshev, a shiur chashuv, in terms of the dinim that affect the object. And therefore, if you look at the dinim that affect the object, you have to look at the shiur of tuma. That's the only place where we see another affecting the object that isn't related to achila, and because of that, the shiur would be a kibetza. Now, yesterday we left off with the machlokas and the Mishnah, but Lamaisa, the Gemara now brings a brisa in which Rabbi Nosson are there. So Rabbi Nosson holds we did not base the shear on either of these issues that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda focus on, but rather it's a particular din derabbanan, where it is that the Rabbanan felt there was a shear that was choshev to be matriach, you to be chayzer. Because as we pointed out yesterday, in neither case is there a halakha d'oraisa that's b'chayev you to return. And therefore, Rabbi Natan Omer, ze v'zek shtei beitzim. A shiur that is choshev, that the Rabbanim wanted you to be matriach, was dafka two beitzim, v'lo hodu lo chachomim. In this, none of the chachomim agreed with him. It was a das yachid. Now, once already we were talking about going back to Yerushalayim, and we talked about Sofim, we talked about the borders of Yerushalayim. So once we're already talking about that, we want to talk about the psukim that are referring to the expansion of Yerushalayim after the war with Bechemes Gog Magog and Bias HaMashiach and the things that will happen in Yerushalayim. So on the Milchemes Gog Magog, so it says over there, before talking about how Yerushalayim extends, it says, Vaya bayomahu, lo yiye or, yikarot v'kipa'or. So on that day, there will be no light, and instead there will be yikarot and kipa'on. So the portion of meaning of the pasuk over there is that the way at least Rashi's masbir and other Rishonim are masbir is that there will be no full light, and it's a time of where things are sort of very dim. Yikarot is that the light will be very yakar. You'll have difficulty finding light, and things will be frozen in place, and only afterwards will come the shining of Or after the victory of Mashiach and so on. So the Gemara Darshans, Yikarot v'kipa'on is the what is exchanged for or. Lo ya or, instead will be yikarot v'kipa'on. What does that mean? It doesn't mean instead. Amar Blazer, this means there won't be or, which is yikarot and kipa'on. Both. How is or both? Because or ba'olam hazeh is very yakar. It's very difficult to find enlightenment in this world. Whereas lo'olam haba, even though it says lo'olam haba over here, it's not really mentioning. There's a little bit of the little bit of confusion in the Gemara over here because Olam Haba refers to different things. It can refer literally to Olam Haba. In this case, it's referring to Yemos HaMashiach, and so it means in the time to come. That's what it means. Latid Lavo. So be Olam Haba, the Das, since it says as the Rambam brings the Halacha in Hilchas Tshuva, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be marbed das, and the das in those days everyone will have. And so that means that enlightenment will be very kafui. Kafui means it's like light. It floats. So it's easy to come by. So although it's very difficult the way things are now, le'atid lavo, it will be very easy to come by. And this, if we take it to mean this, as many of the Beforshim understand, doesn't mean or literally, it means enlightenment, then it continues on directly into what it is that Rabbi Yochanan says, because it's exactly what he's referring to. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Elu nega'im va'alot. Look, I mean, you want to find people who understand nega'im and o'alos in olam hazeh. It's very difficult. Yikarin ein bolam hazeh. These are kinds of halachas that are tough. So yikarin means it's very heavy, like we say. It's heavy. Yakar in the sense of kavod. Kavod is kaved. So these are heavy things in olam hazeh, as we find in our attempt to understand all those. And that's bisman hazeh. But kfuyin ein is very easy to come by in olam haba. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Aymer. No, this is actually a reference to people. B'nei Adam. So the idea of Yikrot is a reference to people that are very choshev ba'olam hazeh, and they are kafui, meaning they're kafuyine lo'olam haba, that the people that are very choshev in the world now will be looked at as very low class, le'atid lavo. Ki adir of Yosef, adir of Yeshua ben Levi, cholashvit nagid. Now over here it's talking about maybe olam haneshamot, or maybe it's literally olam. Again, the Gemara is, as I say, using the word loosely. So it was a mice of Rav Yosef Breder of Yeshua ben Levi who became very ill, v'it nagid, and basically he slipped away. So it's one of these near-death experiences in which his heart stopped for a moment and so on, and they thought he was dead. And then kihadar, he got back to consciousness. So his father said to him, so my chazita, like, what did you see when you slipped away like that? So he said, Rav Yosef says to his father, I saw an upside-down world, olam hafuch ra'iti, that elyonim lamata, all the people that are choshev today, I saw like they're the homeless ones, you know, and the tachtonim are lamala, the ones who are looked down on in olam hazeh, those are the ones who are all the way on top in olam haba. Oi, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi to Rabbi Yosef, that it looks like you got to look at the world that's real, you know. Wow. Olam barura ita. You didn't see anything confusing. You saw reality. So I'm just curious, like, and where were we in that world? You know, like, I mean, we'd like to know what the reality is, referring not only to himself, but Talmid HaChomim in general. So he said, "Ki echadi itu ananacha achiyati nanata." That Talmid HaChomim, according to their madrega, it's exactly the same in olam hazeh. It's just multiplied in the chashivas and so on, but it's the same relative placement. V'shamati shayom omrim. I also heard that they were talking in those in places of emes. Ashrei mi sheba lekan v'talmudo biyado. That very fortunate is someone who gets to this place, and he's carrying his learning in his hand with him. So this is very interesting. The various pshatim. This is there's a Balatanya that talks about the fact that a person who learns Torah, if it isn't really lishma, even though we say that that it's, of course you should learn shelo lishma, shebetov shelo lishma, balishma, that doesn't mean that it's the same Torah. And that Torah only has impact on a level of reality that you face in olam hazeh. It's not Torah that you can bring with you. So the idea of Asher Misha Balakan V'Talmudo Biyodo is that he should be able to come with a real Torah, a Torah Lishma, to a real world. Then there's some beautiful Ramazim over here that are brought by various Beforshim, that Talmudo Biyodo means the things that you've written down of your learning, so that you're able to carry it in your hands. And there's some very strong words said about this issue. The Marshal talks about it, and actually a sefer by my uncle, Rabbi Zer Zalman, I used to speak about it a lot, but there's a lot of Makaris that talk about it, which is that anything that is given to a person to understand is given to him in order to write. Because unless something is written, it doesn't have an impact on the world. That's why we call publishing in Hebrew, hotza'a l'or. You're bringing it out to the light. So once it's brought out to the light, it has an impact on the world. but anything which is given to you and you don't write. So that's merumes in the pasuk that Elohim yavio b'mishpat al kol ne'elam. God is going to call a person to task for anything that he knew and could have written so that people will understand it. And he kept it ne'elam. He kept it hidden. Because the only reason that such things are given to a person is so that ultimately it's meant to be brought into the world through him. And if he doesn't write it and he doesn't farce him and he doesn't publish it, so in that sense, it's considered to be stealing what it was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. And therefore, that's the remez in Asot Sfarim Harbe, which of course is the double meaning, where it's usher to write Yasser B'nihi Zaher, not to write what isn't meant to be written, and whatever, it's the time that it's meant to be written, because otherwise it will be forgotten. That's kolul in the chiev of writing it up. So even if it's not something that should be written up and published, says the Marsha, we'll see that this daf considers the issue of publishing things that should not have been published. But we'll talk about that in a moment. But as far as writing down, even if it isn't published, that is the remez, says the Marsha, and Talmudei B'yadai. And this is the reason that Talmidei Chachamim are called Sofrim. Why Sofrim of all crazy things? So, I mean, obviously the Gemara talks about Ramazan, the Sofrim, Kolosu, Shabbatera, and so on. But the literal meaning of Sofrim is people that spend their time writing. And the Talmidei Chachamim, who kept even the Megillah Sittarim when it wasn't meant to be published, but everyone kept for themselves their learning in a way that they would be able to review it quickly and they would put down their insights that would be difficult to reconstruct at a later time. And this is Talmudo Biyodo, because otherwise it's a strange thing. They say Talmudo Bilibo, but that's not the point. The point is it should be the work in Olam Hazeh is actually Biyodo. Vishamati Shayu Omrim, and furthermore, Rabbi Yosef said to him, that I heard that they were also saying, Harugei Malchut, in Adam Yachol Amod B'Mechitzatam. There were these people that were killed by the Romans. They're in such a unique place in Olam Haba that nobody can come near them. So the Gemara asks, so who's that talking about? Man, you know, you're talking about like the Asar Harugei Malchus? You mean like Rabbi Akiva and the Chaverim of Rabbi Akiva? I mean, that's the way you talk about Rabbi Akiva, because they happen to be martyrs. Like, this is what we're into, martyrdom. That's the big idea. I mean, there's an awful lot more to say about Rabbi Akiva v'chavero than martyrdom. It's like a small issue. So, Mishum Harugei Malchus v'sulo, that's how you talk about them. What a bizoyan. Ela Harugei Lud. It's talking about the case of Harugei Lud, where over there the government, someone had murdered, kidnapped and murdered the daughter of the Caesar. And they blamed the Jews, and they were going to be taking collective action against all the Jews and start killing Jews and pogroms. Anyway, there were these two brothers that came forward, and they said, we did it, and they give all the gory details of what they supposedly did, and that way they focused all of the anger on themselves and were able to save the Jewish people from these pogroms. Those people who obviously did not face a very happy ending, those people are the ones that, even though they didn't have other issues in their lives, that contributed, they were in a madriga that nobody can come close to their mechitza. Anyway, so once we're talking already about the ideas of the expansion of Yerushalayim, Chemes Gog u'Magog, Orva Yikarot, and we're talking over here about bringing to Hegdash things that are supposed to be brought to Hegdash, so we continue on, because in Zechariah it continues talking about Bayomahu, Yiyel Mitzilot Hasus Kodesh Lashem. So it's not clear what mitzilot means. It's going to be written even on the mitzilot of the sus. It sounds like, contextually, it sounds like it's talking about some type of decorative bell. So the mitzilot, the sus, is the kind of things you put around. You put around a horse, and it looks beautiful. It makes sounds as the horse is running. So it's a lotion of tziltzul, of ringing. And on the Mitzilot HaSus, it will be written Kodesh LaHashem, meaning that somebody presented it to the Beis HaMikdash. Well, what exactly does that mean? My Mitzilot HaSus. Omer Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, this is the reference to the actual Hosafa on Yerushalayim. Because what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Mosif all the way to the place where Atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lo'osifa Yerushalayim, to allow people to be Eichel Kochim Kalim. And this is exactly how it comes in our Gemara. We were talking about having to go back to Yerushalayim when you're Yotze, so that in those days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will expand the Mechitzes of the Kedush of Yerushalayim to allow Achilas Kachim Kalim, Ad Shasuz Ratz Umeitzel, as far as a horse can run from the morning until it begins to cast its own shadow under itself, meaning until noon. So that expansion will be the expansion of Yerushalayim. So basically from Alos HaShachar until noon in all directions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will expand Yerushalayim. And that's one pshat. Another pshat, Rabbi Elazar Omar, this means kol mitzilot shetolim lesus b'neinav, yukodesh Hashem. That people will take things off even of their horses in order to be able to bring everything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, that is, I mean, in our terms, you know, it would mean people will take the fenders off of their Jaguars, you know, with all the decorations, and they'll bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. So, you know, their favorite things in life, which like was all the big stuff for them, you know, what's it good for? My Mercedes, little Mercedes symbol. Give it to the Beis HaMikdash, to the guy that had this beautiful solid gold Mercedes thing, to the Beis HaMikdash. That's what it means. So, in modern terms. So that is a question of what kind of nedavos will come to the Beis HaMikdash. Another pshat is Rabbi Yochanan Omar. It means kol bizah shebozezin Yisrael. So over there, it's talking about Melchemes Gog u'Magog, and it's talking about where the things that the amount of materials that will be collected from Gog u'Magog and the unbelievable riches and weaponry and so on will be enough to keep things going for years. And so it says all of what it was that Klal Yisrael is able to gather together the morning after that war, from the morning until the time that Ad Shasus Ratz Umatzil, meaning from the time of the morning till noon, all the first things that are gathered, which is an immense amount of material, all of that first will be given to the Beis HaMikdash. So says the Gemara, Bishlam Leman Yom HaKol Biza Shabazu Yisrael. Look, Rabbi Yochanan's pshat makes sense, because that's why at the end of the posik it says, V'haya hasirot b'beit Hashem k'mizrakim lifnei ha-mizbeach, which means that even the simple pots that were used to cook up the meat in the Beis Hashem, that's talking about even in the Chotzer, so they'll be made out of gold and silver the way the mizrakot of the dam were made out of gold. Okay, that makes sense, because there'll be so much money in the Beis HaMikdash that they will use it to be mechabed the karbonis, even by making the very simple things out of gold and silver. But if you're telling me the other one, I mean, I understand it's very nice that people are giving their golden Mercedes-Benz things, but that's not enough to account for this amount of riches. I mean, how much is the mitzilot asus? No, this is a different thing, says the Gemara. It's not meant to be continuation. It's saying that, look, miltach ritika amar, not only will all of these things be done for the covet, the sense of the covet of the Beis HaMikdash, but also Klal Yisrael will become so rich that they will end up being menadev so much money to the Beis HaMikdash that vaya asirot b'bit Hashem, they will be exactly the same as the gold and silver of the Mizrakot. So Bishlam Elaman Diyamra Bizar, Rabbi Yochanan, the last pshat, he says it's talking about all the things that will be collected by Yisrael. That explains why it says in the next pasuk, V'lo yiyeh kina'ani od b'veit Hashem. Okay, so there will be so much money that there will be no more business. Kanani we'll see as a lashon of business in a moment. There will be no more business that will be done by the Gizborim in the Beis HaMikdash. This is one of the things the Christians love to talk about, right? All of the businesses and the stores and the chanut and so on. So Hegdash used to make money, and the Gizborim used to do business with the money of Hegdash. So this makes sense. Bezdin no longer will need to worry about money, because there'll be so much money over there that there's not going to be any interest in going out to make money. But if you say the other two pshatim, I mean, there's still not going to be that much money. So my veloyeh kna'ani is meant, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, to be understood as a notrikan. Ein kan ani. It means that there will be no one that will be left as an ani, because Klal Yisrael will be so rich in those times that no one will be left in a state of anias. Everybody will give tzedakah and so on. How do we know that kanani means business? Kanani minola de ikre tagar. Well, take a look at the story of Yehuda. Dechtiv hayar sham Yehuda bat ish kanani. So what do you think it means when it says that Yehuda married the daughter of a Canaan? What, you really think that he was from Canaan and that Yehuda married a girl that was a Canaan? You got to be kidding. Ef sheba Avram vizirat Yitzchak, by Yitzchak vizirat Yaakov. I mean, you really believe that after Avram was so careful and he tells to Eliezer, listen, do anything, but not altikach ben yishalev nimi b'not ha-Kananim. And then comes along Yitzchak Avinu, and he tells Yaakov Avinu to be careful and to lo tikach ishami bnot Kanan, and to go to Lavan, and over there he'll find a good Jewish girl, and so on and so forth. So after all of this, you're telling me that Yehuda actually went and just unabashedly takes a woman from Kanan. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yehuda azov nasiv. Ela Amar Reb Shimon ben Lakish, when it says what it's referring to is indeed Kanani as a businessman, that Yehuda went into business. Bat Gavra Tagra, it means that she was the daughter of a chash of a businessman. Dichtiv, where do we see that Kanan can mean business? Kanan biyado mozne mirma. So it means businessmen, you can never trust what it is that they're doing. Basically, they're going to have in their hands phony kind of weights and things like that. Or you can also see in the description of Tzor, which is the business model of the time, that's talking about the equivalent in our days of New York and London. So this is Asher Sochareha Sarim Kina'aneha Nichbadei Aretz. What is it referencing? Kina'aneha? What's Kina'aneha mean in reference to Tzor? But the point is, the merchants were the most choshuva people in the country. So over here, merchant princes, the traders were princes, and the merchants were like the princes. So that was the godless of Tzor. But meanwhile, you see clearly from the Pasuk that the Lashon of Canaan is literally used not as in any way as a nationality, because how you have the Kanaaneha of Tzor is obviously referring to a class like Sareha. So it's obvious that we use the word in that way. By the way, there's also tremendous Ramazim, but they're all hidden between the lines of the interrelationship of the Yerida of Yehuda Mi'echab to this guy that's called Hiram, and the relationship of that to the Hiram that is Baina, the Beis HaMikdash, and that's the Pasuk of Ad Adulam, Yarad, the covet of Yehuda went down to Adulam, which is where this was, and that was the reason that the Beis HaMikdash, which required that input from the same area to Lebanon, Tzor, and that's the reason that it was Shailet on the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban, ultimately. So when we're talking about the Harchova of the Beis HaMikdash in terms of the Mice of Yehuda, it's all very nice that it wasn't Canaan, but the dependency on these aspects of trading with Tzor and Lebanon and the way that Shlomo HaMelech required, this is the beautiful Rabbeinu Bachya who contrasts the binyan of the Mishkan, in which, take a look at the input of the lave of the people and the truma of the people, it's only a nidvas lave built al pi bitzalel, al pi the eisher shnivu bo shemayim v'oretz, and Aaron HaKein and Moshe Rabbeinu and so on. So on the Mishkan, that's what it says, that at seshitim eimdim, anything that was associated with the Mishkan was never ever destroyed. And it was lo sholat yad ever on anything of the Mishkan. And the opposite is true because of the adadulam. So the Ramazim over here in the ultimate expansion of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash L'Asid Lavai is very nogea, the story of Yehuda. So again, I mean, the multi-leveled way that the Gemara brings in things from it just seems to be bringing a riot to Canaan, but L'maisa is nogea, the sugya that we're talking about. V'haya Hashem L'melech, so continues in Zechariah, V'haya Hashem L'melech al kol ha'aretz, b'yom ahu yiyah Hashem echad u'shmo echad. Oto Aid Nalav Echadu? I don't understand what that's supposed to mean. What do you mean on that day HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Echad? Well, we don't say Shema Yisrael Hashem Echad. What does that mean? I mean, obviously, he's Echad, no? Om Revach HaBachanina, no, it's not the same. Because Lo Kol Olam HaZeh Olam HaBa. Olam HaZeh, we see two completely different hanhagas in the world. So we have two completely different brachas. Al Besorot Tovot, you say Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv. Chas v'shalom ha-besurot ra'ot, you have to say Baruch Dayan ha-emet. So what we see is that there's Emidas ha-din, the Dayan ha-emet, and then there's Emidas ha-rachamim, Baruch ha-tov ha-meitiv, and we actually give separately. I mean, that's an incredible thing to say, because remember that Baruch means that we're giving a separate recognition and wish that there should be an expansion of this hanaga, as if, chas v'shalom, you're talking about two different gods. I mean, like, this is about as opposite as you can get. I understand that we're being mevorech each one of these midas, and b'chol mida v'mida shemodeid lo, avimod lo ma'od ma'od, and so on and so forth. But I mean, what shaykh to say that you're going to give two separate brachas just because it looks to you like two separate anhogas? I mean, you don't believe that this is the same Yad Hashem? So what proves more than that, that we cannot say Hashem echad u'shmor echad? Obviously, it isn't the same. That's what we're saying. There's only one bracha. Kulo hatov v'hametiv. And this is involved in the Shmo Echad, which actually comes from this week's parsha that we just leaned over Shabbos, is the mocker for all of this. Because when the Gemara says, the Shmo Echad, what exactly, what do you mean, Shmo Echad? I mean, what, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Shmo Echad? Says Zomer of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that's correct. Because Loko Olam HaZeh, Olam HaBa. Olam HaZeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is written with Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. But we don't say that name. We only say a Lashon of Adnut with the Aleph Dalet. Aval Olam HaBa, Kulo Echad. Nikra B'Yud-Kei, V'Nichtav B'Yud-Kei. In Olam HaBa, the Shem HaShem is actually used as the way of covering the Hanhaga of Adnut. Because in terms of Olam HaZeh, the concept of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is entirely as the letters indicate. They're all letters that have to do with the words for being and existence. So these are not the Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather the underlying primal existence, as the Rambam speaks of which all of these Hanhagas are emergent. But when we're talking about in practical terms of relating to a world that is full of essence and makes it very difficult for us to perceive the nature of pure being, so we relate to things with a gaudy kind of thing, right? So remember the Goyim used the word God for meaning, you know, good mazel and so on. It's the name of an Avodah Zarah. So we take on this God-like idea in which all things have this issue of power and memshalah, and they're going to be controlled by some great power. But that is all childish, and it's what we're limited to in Olam HaZeh in recognizing that the Shem HaShem, which we have to keep with our minds, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, but in our pronunciation, we're not allowed to pronounce because it's only with the Shem of Adnut. Lamaisa, when somebody reaches a Madrega, that they're able to see the totality of being that is in all aspects of Adnut, so then they're able to be masig the real shame, and they're able to utilize that shame in ways that is not mutter for regular people. So, and it's because of that Rava thought that it would be mutter to teach people how to say the Shem Hashem, meaning that they would be able to be makir through that, what it means to be able to penetrate the veil of Adnut into the Shem Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. You'll notice that in all the Sephardish Sidurim, in every Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, it has embedded the Shem Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, because ultimately that's the goal of a human being, is to be able to integrate those two Shemas, to cut out the duality, the dualism of the way in which he experiences life in Olam HaZeh. So Rava wanted to actually give a shir and to teach people that they should be able to understand what that is. Amar Le'ahu Saba, so you know that very special old man that we're waiting for, I don't know where the heck is taking so long, and he says to Rava, No, that's why it says Ze Shmi La'olam. But it writes La'olam without the Vav. So therefore, Ze Shmi, as Rashi brings, Le'alem. You're supposed to hide that. You keep that private and you conceal it from people. You don't express it to people. It's not something that's teachable. It's only something that can emerge after a lot of experience in Aveda. Rabbi Avina Rami sees, as we spoke before, about the idea of being megala things that are not ready for gilui, and that therefore a person violates the privacy of Torah, the sedes of Torah. That was the shloshi yamei cheshech that came from the translation of the Torah in ways that reduced it because people tried to be shalit, the things that they really had no idea of. The beautiful medrash that compared it to putting a lion in a cage and thinking that now you know what a lion is. So Rav Avina Rami. So Rav Avina actually pointed out the stira in the two parts of the pasuk that we're talking about. It says in the pasuk, Zeh Shmi La'olam. So first it says, this is my name, but La'olam Midarshin La'alem. You're supposed to keep it private. And then it says the next words, Vezeh Zichri L'dor Dar. But afterwards it says, this is how it is that I'm supposed to be called. So the meaning is, says Ravina, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo kishani nichtav ani nikra. There are two different ways. There's a way to write me, to write my name, nichtav ani b'yudke. However, nikra ani ba'alav dalet. So you should only be mazkir the shame and not actually pronounce the shame. So that brings us to our very important moment for Sir Richard, who seems to be hiding. I don't know why that is. And that...
In Olam Hazeh, in order to keep speaking, one needs to drink. And that it says, when Talmid HaChachamim drink, it's like the Nesachim on the Despair. So it's very matim for this stuff.
I see. Okay, thank you. Thank you for the compliment of calling me a Talmud Chacham. This stuff is talking about real Talmid HaChachamim. So, Hadron Alach Elo Ovrim. It doesn't help when you're muted. I don't care how loud you're going to use that foghorn that's not hooked up. We'll try it again from the top. You're still muted. Come in, Richie. Richie, I'll unmute you. Maybe I can unmute you. Let's see. No, it says I can only ask to unmute. I'm asking you to unmute. Apparently, you've got some serious problem. There we go. Let me say it again. Hadron Alach Elu Ovrin. Wow. All right, we go. And in Bezrat Hashem, starting tomorrow, we're going to have to do a chazor of this whole perek here. We got too many big ideas. Mokom shenagu lasot melacha ba'arvei psachim ad chatzot osim. So if there was a minig in this area, people would work on Erev Pesach up till Chatzot, you're allowed to. If it's a mokum that the minig is not to do malocha, you're not allowed to. And as a matter of fact, if you come from a place where the minig is that you're allowed to, and you go to a place where the minig is that you're not, or vice versa, you go from a place where you were born and you live in a place where nobody ever did malocha, Erev Yontif, Erev Pesach, and then you come the mokum that they do, you in both cases are going to be limited by whatever the chumrah is. Notim alav chumrei ha-makom shi'atza misham, v'chumrei makam shahalach l'sham. You cannot change your minhag for another minhag to be mekel, and you cannot be mekel on a minhag in a place where people have a minhag to be machmir. You cannot be noyeg with a minhag to be mekel, and therefore you wouldn't be allowed to. Al yishaneh adam mipnei ha-machloket. And you can never change because this will cause arguments. Now, obviously, that only works in one direction. Because from a place that you don't do to a place that you do, I mean, you know, where's the problem of the machloket exactly over there? Al yishaneh, we don't do that. We do change. We keep our own minhag of chumrah. Okay, so the Gemara will discuss that. Kayot Sebo. Now, there's another interesting case. And this case is somewhat different because this case is not dependent on minhag. This case is dependent on the status of things where you came from and where you go to. And this is referring to the din of Biur during Shemitah. Because the halacha is that the moment that a particular growing thing is no longer available on the free range, so an animal wouldn't be able to get it, then you have to get rid of it from the house. So whenever it's matzu l'chaya in the sadeh, it says l'chaya tasadeh. So wherever it's matzu l'chaya in the sadeh, so then you don't have to get rid of it. But the moment that it's kolu min l'chaya min ha-sadeh, then atachayav l'va'er min ha-bayit. Now, obviously, if you can go from one place to another, and you're flying from Maine to L.A. during Shvius, of course, this is only after the USA becomes part of Eretz Yisrael. So in that time, there would be obviously different things that are available to the Chaya and the Sada, where it's all covered with snow in one place, and it's nice and warm in another place. So how are you knowing? Well, interestingly enough, Parashvius is the same thing. If you go from a Mokum Shekalu, and there's no longer anything available outdoors, and you go to a place Shalokalu, or vice versa, Mokum Shalokalu, or Mokum Shekalu, in either event, you would have to be Machmir to be Mevaer. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, we tell the guy, say, or he can say to us, we'll see in the Gemara what this means exactly, Seva Velecha Afata. What do you mean? You don't like that I'm eating it? You can bring it for yourself from the fields. Okay, to be explained. Asks the Gemara, interesting question. Why are we talking about Arvei Pesachim? Is there not an Isser to do Malacha even on Erev Shabbos and on Erev Yontev? So why is Pesach different? Now, we know there's a specific issue on Pesach, and that is that, first of all, on a day that you're bringing a korban, you're not supposed to be doing malacha. And furthermore, obviously, we have a very particular pressure on Erev Pesach, in which there's so much that needs to be done and so many mitzvahs that are nogea, that it makes sense that we would have to concentrate as Lamaisa happens, as everybody knows, Erev Pesach, even where you're not bringing a korban Pesach, is just about the busiest day of the year. So just imagine, oh my God, if you also added to all of those last minute chametz arrangements and setting the table and checking your lettuce, and oh God, you'd have to go to the Beis HaMikdash and bring a korban Pesach, and it's horrifying to consider, right? So, I mean, it makes sense that it would be a bigger Isser. And indeed, there may well be a very big difference, because the question of how do we define mina mincha v'lamala, the question is that mincha gedela or is that mincha ketana? That could be very different. There are many mefarshim who learn, many of the rishonim who understand, that when you're talking about not doing melacha on Erev Shabbos or on Erev Yontav besides Pesach, you're talking about 9.5 hours in the day, mincha ketana, where the day is almost finished. Whereas by Per of Pesach, we're talking about Mincha Gedela, which is basically 12:30. So, I mean, why don't we, what kind of funny question is that? If you hold that they're different dinim, so obviously we're talking about the specific din of Pesach. So what are you suggesting that it should have said in the Mishnah? So even those who understand the Isser to be different on Pesach as on any other time, they understand that the Mishnah should have said Asiyas Malacha without defining which mincha it is. In other words, we would understand ourselves. Of course, there's an issur of doing mimincha lamala. For Pesach, the minhag would be up till chatzos, and other times it would be up to teisha v'chetzi shoes. That's not a problem. We're not asking that the Mishnah should be saying the same thing. We're just asking, why does the Mishnah imply that this is like a unique kind of idea, which would give people the feeling that when it comes to Erev Shabbos, you know, they can go and, work on paving their driveway or whatever, the same as any other day. And that's very misleading. So it's kedai to mention in the Mishnah. That's all the Gemara is asking. Because doesn't it say in a bright, anybody who does melacha on those days, he will never see, doesn't mean never see in his life, it means never see from that work, he will never see a siman bracha. Even if he makes money on it, he'll end up losing that money. And so Lamaisa, it's not worth it. You're not going to gain anything by doing that work. So therefore, the Gemara says, well, I mean, wait, you don't see that that is very different? than what we're talking about Erev Pesach. First of all, I mean, in the case of Shabbos and Yom Tovim, it doesn't say Somuch L'Mincha. It says Min HaMincha V'Lamala. Now, when it comes to Pesach, Erev Pesach, it starts at Chatzos, which is a half an hour before, and that's only Somuch L'Mincha. Furthermore, what does it say over there? If you do it, it doesn't say that we're over a terrible Isser and we're going to give you Malkus to Rabbanan or we're going to be Mishamet you or whatever. It just says, Eino roe simin brocha. Avo shamuti la mishamtina le. We're not going to put a person into Nidui because he insists on doing work on Erev Shabbos to the last minute. Ha'cha shamuti na mi mishamtina le. But in Erev Pesach, it's an Isser shal mamash. Now, there's a number of things that are hanging here in this sugya to try to understand exactly what's going on. I mean, does this mean that it's not really usher and that it's just that the Rabbanan are upset with you if you do it and that therefore you won't be roa simin bracha? Or is there actually an isser? It's just not considered to be an isser chomur. That is a machlokas haposkin. So there are some who paskin, there is no isser whatsoever. It's just that the chachomim disapprove and that ain't a roa simin bracha. Furthermore, as far as the machlokas about whether it's teisha v'chetzi shos, mincha ketan, or whether it's mincha gedela, over there also, we pask in la'alocha that somebody who is semech on the mincha ketana, that eno mafsid. It's not so bad. So, first of all, it doesn't mean really that it's usher. And secondly, it doesn't mean from chatzos. And thirdly, even when it comes to Pesach, we need to understand what it means not to do melacha. I mean, obviously it doesn't mean you can't turn on the lights. So what does it mean? So the ikar lahalacha is that what is meant by melacha is whatever you would not be allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. That's the meaning of melacha. Not including the concept of business. In other words, if you're in business, you can keep your store open to the last minute, as we saw in Mesech HaShabbos when we have the special tequillas and so on, to close the stores. That doesn't start from Mincha Ketana. So doing business is not considered to be malacha. And doing the things that are nogea, cooking for the Shabbos and cooking for the, all of those things are obviously part of what you do for Tzarech HaMoed. That's what you do on Erev Pesach as well. Kol Shekin on Erev Shabbos. So what we're talking about over here is specifically those issues that have to do with mamish uvda de chol, that has nothing to do with your preparations, and that should have been done before in certain cases. That's already a question about shaving, cutting your nails, and so on, which are not to be done during Chol HaMoed, which over there might be different for Erev Shabbos. Okay, all of these things are details in a sugya, as you could see over here, it's quite complex, which we'll get more into in the last parak. We'll get to Arvi Pesachim. Gufa. So getting back to the Braita. Ha'oseh melacha b'arvei Shabbatot b'arvei yomim tovim min ha'mincha v'lamala, and even b'motzei Shabbos, and even motzei yontov v'motzei yom ha'kippurim. So this is referring to the moment after the Shabbos is over. You're supposed to be mosif min hakodesh, min hakol al hakodesh, and therefore, before you're supposed to be mafsik, and afterwards you give a little extra time to Shabbos, and you don't jump out to do malachas right away. So people who do that, mitzvah yontiv, mitzvah yom kippur, and in any case where there is some nidnud avera means there's even a hint of doing something that is inappropriate. And what would that include? That would include a Tainas Tzibur, which today we don't have a real Tainas Tzibur, remember, because Tainas Tzibur in the Gemara is talking, we have one Tainas Tzibur, that's Tisha B'Av. So over there, Einachinami, you're not allowed to do Malacha on Tisha B'Av. So on La Tuyei Ta'anit Tzibur, which in those days included the special Ta'aniyot that were brought for the Geshamim when it didn't rain and so on. So Eino Roe Simin Brocha Liolam, he will never see any kind of simin bracha from that work. I have an amazing story about Tisha B'Av, where I was very, very hesitant. So I was going to be paid for coming into New York on Tisha B'Av and giving a shiur about Tisha B'Av in one of these more modern shuls in Manhattan. And I was very debating, you know. I mean, I really needed the money. And in those days, it was $1,000 was a lot of money. So I finally decided, look, you know, it's really Litzorach, the Tisha B'Av, I'm giving this year. Mela, you know, so they're paying me. All right, that's not called Melacha on Tisha B'Av, that they're just paying me for my tircha and so on. So, okay, so I go into New York for Tisha B'Av. Fine. And I give this year on Tisha B'Av, come back home, one of my kids takes the car to pull out of the driveway and smashes right into Ellie's car. Okay, so we go, we take the car, get an estimate for what it's going to cost to get it fixed. Exactly $1,000. I was like, as soon as I get back home. Anyway, so much for the big money that we make on Tisha B'Av. All right, Tana Rabbana. Yesh zoriz v'nizkar. You know, there's people that are very zoriz. I mean, they're like, they work hard and they get schar for it. And there's other people that they can work very well and they end up losing. Yesh shafal v'nizkar. There's people who are lazy, don't get a thing done, and they can get rewarded for it. And then there's people that are lazy and they end up losing. Zoriz v'nizkar. So being, I guess the best word is assiduous, you know, like really putting your life into something, and he gets a reward for it, is where he works like a dog all week long. Ovid kulei shabbata, but comes Erev Shabbos at the time that he's not supposed to work, he doesn't do work. So then he's zoicha. But then there's a guy who is so zoriz, he can end up being mafsid because he works all week long and he continues to work all the way up to Shabbos also. So that means that anything that he got from that work is going to end up being nifsad. There's also such a thing as being lazy and being niska. That means somebody who doesn't work all week long and he doesn't work on Erev Shabbos either. So, okay, so at least he didn't work Erev Shabbos. So for that, he has schar. But then there's the guy who shuffle of an ifsa, doesn't do a darn thing all week. And now it's almost Shabbos. He says, oh my gosh, I haven't gotten anything done all week. We better take care of that. And if I don't clean out the toilet now, you know, what's going to be? So now is the time to do his plumbing work. That guy is shuffle of an ifsa. Lo avit kulei shabbata. And then comes Erev Shabbos. And that's when he realizes, oh my God, what a mess. Omar Rava. Yeah, you know, these women in Mechuzza, Rav always had something nice to say about the LA women over here. So, they don't do a darn thing. They sit there, they got their maids, and they're cooking all Shabbos for them and everything. You should just know the reason that they don't work on Erev Shabbos is not because they give a hang about Shabbos. It's because they are so rotten spoiled. It's Mishum Man Finkuntahu. They're just so used to have everything done for them because they never do anything. Oh, call you an army look up. You ever see any of them lift a finger to get anything done? No. But I want you to know that even so, they get schar for not working on Erev Shabbos. So there's shofo v'niska karin and light. Rava says, look, there seems to be a steer in the psukim. One pasuk says, ki gadol ad shamayim chasdecha. And one pasuk says, ki gadol me'al shamayim chasdecha. I understand. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed, does it only reach up to the shamayim? Or is it above the Shamayim? That's a pretty big contradiction, wouldn't you say? Ketzad. Ah, kan bosim lishma. So people who are oisek in a mitzvah for the Rotzen Hashem, the Shema Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there it's me'al HaShamayim, because it's in a completely different realm of activity. V'kan bosim shelo lishma. This is as Rabbi Yehuda says, because Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Liolam yasok adam b'torah u'b'mitzvot af al pi shelo l'shma, shemitok shelo l'shma b'alashma. But nonetheless, as we said earlier with the Balatanya, that there's a tremendous difference. That in an esek of l'shma, you are involved in a different order of existence. If it's shelo l'shma, you're stuck on ad hashamay, tachas hashemesh, and are unable to get beyond. That's the hachutza of Avram Avinu. You won't be able to get beyond. Tana Rabbana.
At the end of the last parak, right? Relating also to the issues of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, where you're functioning.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's often like this, that the end of the last parak continues on. So I'm relating it to the Balatanya we spoke about. Tana Rabbana. Hamitzapel ischar ishto v'rechaim. People who don't take care of their parnasa, and they can only look forward to having food because their wife is working, or to a very low class, we don't understand what it means, but we'll explain it, rechaim, doing work with a grinder, he's never going to see a siman bracha. So when it says the work of his wife, it doesn't mean that she's really working in terms of doing creative work. It means he sends his wife out, with a scale into the marketplace, to do a service for people, weighing their things. I mean, it's like, it's these guys that sit at the corner to do your windshields. I mean, it's that type of work. And that is, you're being mavaza, your wife, in doing something like that. And when it's talking about rechaya, it doesn't mean that you have a rechayim there. You can make good money. It means that you rent out a hand grinder. And the amount of profit that you make off of that after you deduct the wear and tear and so on it just makes you look so low class. Now, v'avda u'mizabna, if your wife is making things, she's painting, she's knitting, and baking, whatever. So then, there the pasuk uses that as a model for how wonderful an eshes chayil is. It says, sadin astava timkor. So she makes this sadin and she sells it. Tana rabbanan mistaker bekanin ubekankanim ino roes simin bracha liolam. Somebody who makes money by selling either bamboo or empty jars, he's not going to be able. Speaking of Simen Bracha, he's not going to be able to see a Simen Bracha. Why? Because he looks like he's making a lot of money. Because there's constantly these big trucks are coming in and out of the warehouse. The fact that the truck is full of empty jars never occurs to anybody, And everybody's, oh my gosh, look at this guy, must be making tons. He never gives any money to tzedakah. He lives like a pauper. What a miser. Anyway, so they end up giving him an ayin hara, and that takes away the bracha. So because kiven enough for shafachzayu, you've got so much volume here without any content. Shaltabu ena. Tana rabbana. Tagre simta. People who do business on the street, they set up a little stand in the street and everybody's looking at them. Umigadle behema daka. People who raise small animals and they eat from sodais of other people. People who will cut down. They'll cut down an olive tree to be able to sell the wood for olive wood makers that are claiming the tree was dead anyway. Or people that every time they're offered food, they always go for the best piece. And everybody knows. This is a guy, make sure you give the platter to him last. Because if you give it to him first, there ain't going to be nothing good left. Those kind of people. Those kind of people, ain't a rose, simon broccoli, arlem. Why? Because they attract attention to themselves in a way that makes people look down at them or jealous of them. They won't be rosim and brocha my taima. Tohu ba inche. People are just like, they're always thinking about, like, whoa, how does this guy get away with that? Tana rabbana. There are four prutot, ein bem simen brocha li olam. There's the kind of money that's never going to get you a real brocha in your life. And what are these four prutot? People who write the Sifrei Torah and tefillin and so on. Schar miturgamanim, people who are the ones who stand up on the Shabbos and they give over the drasha, and also schar yitomim, people who make money by investing the money of yitomim, of estates, and they take half the profit and they share the profit. It's profit sharing deals they make with estates for orphan. And ma'ota ba'ot mimidinat hayam, people who do business with China. They always get screwed. So bishlamat schar meturgamanim. So what that really means is the guy's constantly shipping overseas, and one of these days that boat is going down, and therefore in the end he's not going to be roa simin bracha. So bishlamat schar meturgamanim. I understand the reason is because it looks like the guy is getting paid for doing work on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to get paid specifically for Shabbos. You have to get paid for, the entire job. But people are going to say, this guy does all his work on Shabbos. That's the main thing he's getting paid for. And because of that, he doesn't roa simen bracha. I understand why people who work for investing money for an estate. I mean, because, if you make the slightest error, in your 50% calculation. So these are ketanim. They're not going to be able to be meichel you for any money that really came to them that you keep. And then chas v'sholom, the onesh for stealing from yisomim, can you imagine? So it's bad news. They're lav v'nei mechila nino. I understand where Moe, Sabos, Bimidin HaSayam, the guy makes tons of money for a couple of years. Bishum Dalav Kol Yuma Mizrachi Shnisa. You know, you can't expect miracles every day. You can have a miracle for a year or two and actually make money off of China, but one day they're going to get you, you know. Ella, I don't understand why people who write Sifrei Torah and Tefillin, I mean, why in the world would they not get a bracha? Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, you should know that there were 24 ta'aniyot that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola kept by themselves in order that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should not allow these people to get rich. Why? Because they're needed desperately. And the moment that they get rich, they're going to stop writing. So we can't allow them to make enough money to get rich off of. Because Ilmolei Mitashrin ain't Kotvim. The moment they get rich, they stop writing. Tana Rabbana. Kotvei Sefarim, Tefillin, Mezuzot, and not only them, but also all the foreign bookstores and the places that sell the Tefillin and sell the Sifrei Torah, Hain, Tagareim, anybody that's involved in doing things that are Melecha Shamayim, including people who sell Tcheles, none of them get rich. Einan Roya Simen Brocha L'Yoylam, unless they're Oiskin L'Shma. If they're doing this entirely lishma, it makes no difference to them. If they have money, they don't have money. So then they'll continue to do this wonderful work, even if they're multimillionaires. I'm doing this because I feel this is what needs to be done. Then they'll be Raya Simen Bracha. So this is the one place where the difference between us and lishma, shaloi lishma, actually will make a nafkamina in your parnasa. B'nei Beishan, no g'lo haviyasu mitzulet sidon b'male shabata. People in Beishan, they did a lot of business, and even so, they would not travel from Tsur to Sidon. Remember, Sidon, that was the big marketplace, the little island that was where all of the business was done. It was that people would travel to. They built a bridge there. Ultimately, these people would never go on Erev Shabbos to do their business there, which was a tremendous loss. And there was a chumrah that they took upon themselves because they were doing okay anyway. So then the next generation, the children come to Rabbi Yochanan and they said, look, Omrlo, Avatin Efshalahu, our father's business was great in those days. They were making a lot of money. I mean, things are really tough. Anan lo efshalan. I mean, do we have to stick with this minig? I mean, we simply can't afford it. It's like cutting down 30% of our income. Omalu said, Rabbi Yochanan, it's too late for you guys. Kvar kiblu avotechem aleihem, your forefathers have accepted it upon you, and therefore it's binding. Shenema shma b'ni musar avicha v'al titosh torati mecha. I cannot be moderate for you. B'nei chozoi nagi demafashe chala me'aroza. And the people from chozoi, they used to take off chala from rice cakes. Otuv amrila Rav Yosef. So people came and said over to Rav Yosef, but they're doing this. Rabbi Yosef says, get somebody who's a non-Kohen, and everybody knows is a non-Kohen, and let him eat all of those rice cake challah in front of them to teach them a lesson that rice is not chayim and challah. Hey, say, Abayim, I don't understand. I thought, didn't we just say, Dvar mamutarim v'achayrim no'agub and iser, that you're not supposed to be matirat bifneim? How are you telling me to be matirat? Omar lo, v'lav mi'itmar Allah. Omrev Chista Bekutai. Is that the idea over here with the Kutim? Remember, we had all of these questions about whether they were even Jewish, Bichlal, and that's only true because they're going to get confused and they won't realize that what you're trying to tell them is that it's not Chayiv and Chala, and it's going to be coming to make problems.